This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today is a conversation, a quick fire conversation between me and the hot nerd. Let's jump into the intro. I'll tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue. What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button, follow, bell, whatever. My name is James McPherson from Risk Fluent Limited, and I am the host of Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is kind of like our passion and our value, our purpose at Risk Fluent. So thank you for joining us on our journey. It's lovely to have you here. Today, we are talking with the Hop Nerd. So, the Hop Nerd, Mr. Sam Goodman, is becoming a regular on Rebranding Safety. But this is an episode where I was on the Hop Nerd. We screwed up the times and the dates, and we only had 30 minutes, and we decided, screw it, let's go with this. We haven't planned this. We haven't really thought what we're going to talk about could be crammed into 30 minutes, but let's go for it. So we literally had a fast 30-minute in-depth conversation. Have a listen. Tell me what you think. I'll catch you at the end.
I'm going to start recording just so I don't forget, because it's been that kind of morning, man. I woke up this morning to find out that one of the dogs had gotten in here and chewed up my other headphones, the ones that actually work, so I can only hear you in one ear right now. So I had to order. Order another pair this morning. It's been one thing after another today, man. I screwed up our times. It's been bad, man.
How the fuck are we gonna talk just for 30 minutes? I don't think that's ever happened.
We're just gonna have to run with it, man. We're just gonna have to run with it. And so
it's gonna be a Hop Nerd Rebranding Safety quick fire session.
Let's just go, man. So I'm just gonna go. So I think everyone knows who you are. But let's do like a quick recap of who you are, what you got going on, all that stuff. We've had you on, what, 2-3 times already? A couple times? It's been a blast, man.
It's twice. Might be wrong. And then once I've introduced myself, because I'm going to put this out on my podcast, I want you to introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, we'll do it, man.
So my name's James McPherson. I run a company called Risk Fluent, and I also... Our purpose as a company is to rebrand safety. So we have a YouTube and a podcast channel called Rebranding Safety. That's been going for about 4 years. I've been in safety for just over a decade. And we do kind of two types of safety, really. We do the technical stuff where we try and use this high reliability stuff, but for normal safety for small businesses. And then we do the more cultural type stuff for the big businesses. And we chat shit on the podcast and the YouTube channel all the time. And who are you, Sam?
My turn. I get to go now. Jeez, man, this is cool. So Sam Goodman, a lot of people know me as the Hop Nerd from the Hop Nerd podcast. Kind of similar. I mean, I think that's what I remember from the first time we met, man, as we sit there and kind of like, man, we're similar in so many different ways and profession and kind of all this stuff. And so very, very similar, story. I've been doing safety for about 15-ish years now. So just right there with you, right around the same amount of time. For about half that time has been into human and organizational performance, or however we want to say that, trying to do safety differently, safety better, something that's not what I started with. I was one of those folks that was indoctrinated early on in my career into more traditional approaches to safety, got frustrated with that, almost left, wrote a couple books about that, found my way into this kind of human and organizational performance space. And so nowadays, in addition to the podcast, kind of the same, Hop Nerd, doing human organization performance consulting, help, coaching, all that kind of stuff, trying to bring those concepts to life in organizations that need that kind of help. So that's who I am. Podcaster, crazy person, provocateur, all the above.
Love it. What are we talking about? I can't remember.
So I think, we caught up because we hadn't talked to each other in like, it'd been a minute, man, because I had life stuff going on and work stuff going on. And you had life stuff and work stuff going on. You welcomed a little one to the world, which is amazing. So we haven't been on the podcast since then. So we've got to say congratulations. That's been what?
Thank you.
A year ago now?
No, two. She's
two. Holy cow, man.
I feel fucking old.
Well, trust me, man. That's why I wear the hat. I used to wear the hat because I liked it, and I wear the hat now to cover the gray hair in between haircuts because I usually cut it pretty, you know, shave the sides pretty high so I can get rid of the grays. But
I've swore a lot already. I can't remember. Do we swear on the Hop Nerd? Are we allowed to swear? Or
fuck yeah, man. We can say whatever we want to.
Yeah, that's cool.
As I upload things, I just automatically hit the explicit button, so it's okay. People at this point know what they signed up for. So, when we were catching up, though, I didn't mean to derail us there. When we were catching up before, we were talking about how we bring some of these ideas into, I would say, smaller, more mom and pop kind of organizations, because big organizations have a lot more wiggle room to be able to go play with stuff like this, right? And that's just obvious, like budget, time, resources. It's just, I don't want to say that it's easier, because in some sense, you know, those organizations aren't as nimble. You know, I hear people talk about large organizations being like aircraft carriers on good days and the Titanic on probably worse days, but they're hard to steer, and they are sinkable. Right. But they often have the resources and time and all those things I was just mentioning to be able to go play with this stuff, try it out, kind of figure stuff out, where mom and pop organizations don't necessarily have that ability. You know, when it's three folks, you know, me, my cousin, and my brother-in-law in a van trying to do work, and we have a couple other vans that we have a couple other employees that do that. That's a whole lot different conversation when we're talking about safety, health, human organization, whatever, right? It's just a totally different conversation. So I think that's where we landed on was what are some ideas on how we can bring that stuff, those better ideas or just better approaches? What's I guess the tactical kind of bits of that that's applicable to those folks?
Yeah, I remember now. I remember. And I think there is something first we need to acknowledge on this, in that I think a lot of the conversations that we have around this new view, safety differently, HOP, whatever you want to call it, mate, it's so far from the reality of the small business. Like, it is miles away from the reality of Bob's Roofing or Steve's Waste Company or whatever. Like, some of the shit I see is just like, whoa, fucking hell. Like, shit, there's no point even talking about like building capacity here. And then I think some people might turn around and say, actually, you need to talk about that, because that's the whole problem that got us here, is that they've got this perception of safety. But then there's the next problem that we don't talk. This perception of health and safety, be it because of the way we've done safety or what, is so deep rooted, man. Like, so deep rooted. That actually if I'm honest, I'm a bit exhausted by all these thought leaders, and I'm fed up of reading it. It's the same shit book. I'm just like, do you know what? It's got no connection to the reality of some of these businesses. The business, I don't know what it's like in America, I've never worked in America, but in England, the British economy is a race to the bottom. Like, 100%, it is a race to the cheapest quote. Everything is cheap, 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 cheap. And we're going to try and talk to them about building, to your point, building resilience and, you know, building some capacity and having nice loads of slack in your operations. These guys, there is no slack. It's the cheap quote to get to win the tender of the job. And then it's do it as fucking quick as possible. Like, if I'm going to talk about building a high performance team, fuck off. I need the cheapest guys and the cheapest raw materials and the fastest job. And that, you know, that is miles away from the Deckers, the Conklins, the Honagles of the world.
Way different, right? I think it's very similar, I think, in a lot of ways to what you're just mentioning in the economy. And then you also see this emergence of kind of like solopreneurs and kind of these kind of small entrepreneurs and kind of small startups. And I mentioned like a few folks in a van doing stuff, you know, because that's a lot. I mean, just here in Arizona where I'm at, I mean, there's a dude in a van that made a company that just, and there's a thousand of them, right? And it's him and them and a couple of their family members to start with. And then maybe they have 5 or 10 employees and they're doing some pretty high risk crap, right? I mean, here we're building tons and tons of houses. You got guys crawling all over roofs and laying tile and doing all the kind of crazy stuff that comes along with building homes or building apartment buildings. Or I'm just using that as an example because I can look out my window, like right across the street, and they're building like 150 new homes, like over on a hill. You know? So I can do some safety observations with my binoculars from the window. But that's exactly it. And especially in those situations where profit margins are like razor thin, especially as a startup company, and I just had to buy a $50,000 van and I'm having to pay a payroll and all of those things. I think so. Something that was standing out to me as we were kind of, as you were kind of talking, was this idea that, you know, with our larger organizations that I just call them safety focused organizations. Yeah. Organizations that kind of have that embedded somewhere and have had that embedded within their organization for a good amount of time. And they're usually mid to large size kind of organizations. I think that we take for granted the fact that safety has been ever present, even though that it's not, we can look back on it now and kind of apply a healthy dose of presentism and kind of compare where we're at morally now and say, well, that was immoral then, you know, and that's not fair. That's obviously not fair. We're kind of bad at doing that quite a bit, especially at safety stuff. But where I was going with that is we take that for granted that in these organizations, we take the fact that we've had traditional safety around since like the dawn of time in these organizations for granted. And it's acted as kind of that series of stepping stones that's led us to this point in our maturity that then allows for us to pursue some things that are a little different or a little innovative or things like human and organizational performance, where we can kind of shift in tune because we've already have laid that bedrock, right? We're kind of on stable ground. And when you're with an organization or you're starting an organization, and maybe the only thing in safety that you've been concerned with so far is like, okay, if the regulator shows up, how do we not get a citation? Or maybe not even that much. I don't know how the regulatory environment is in the UK, but you know, here.
Don't turn up. There's not enough of them.
There's like five. Yeah, there's like five for the entire country. Right? It's a little more than five, but it's not that many. Like it's like under 1,000 for the entire country. Mm-hmm. Right. But like here in Arizona, we have a state run program. So instead of having OSHA, we have ADOSH. For now, there's some talk about rescinding that. But I think for the entire state, there's like 15 inspectors.
Really?
I mean, Arizona's massive. You know, Arizona's a massive place. So again, I guess not to sidetrack us, I know we're, you and I both are both in like a time crunch a little bit today, but that was what was standing out to me is that I think we take that for granted. Right? I think we take for granted that this kind of doing things differently or trying different approaches is a part of maturity that has come along with all those past evolutions, because we're keeping a lot of that, right? We're not getting rid of prevention. We're not getting rid of, like, you know, following the regulations. We're not just throwing all that stuff out the window. I think it's been a series of stepping stones that led us to this. In small organizations, you don't necessarily have that.
Yeah. And to put this into perspective, in the UK, SMEs, small, medium-sized enterprises, account for 99.9% of the business population in the UK economy.
Yeah.
99.9%.
That's amazing.
Like, I'm the people we're targeting with this stuff, or people that having these conversations, are the 0.1%.
Yeah.
And talking about the 99.9%, and of those, I knew it was a high percentage, but I wanted to check, so I googled it. At the start of 2020, there were estimated to be 6 million UK private sector businesses. 1.4 million of these had employees, and 4.6 had no employees.
Wow.
So 6 million have no employees.
Wow.
And you know, it's a huge percentage of that, I believe, is going to be really micro to small businesses.
Right. Yeah.
Minor percentage of that is actually medium business, because medium business in the UK is actually a pretty big business. But yeah. And then if you were to kind of look at the other point here, I've just Googled how many inspectors there are in the UK for the HSE. It says there's more than 100 inspectors in 22 offices across the country. So when you say more than 100, you mean 101.
just a smidge above 100, just enough to say more than.
Yeah, there was 100, but then there's like this one guy who's not very good, so we'll call him half. But it's just So when you so you think, oh yeah, you know, most businesses are safe now, right? Like, mate, I've worked in some businesses in this very short amount of time of 7 months I've been in a consultancy, and I'm just like, fuck me, like that machine is not legal,
right?
But just no idea. And we are the fucking miles away from this stuff. But the problem we have now, I think, is what I hear a lot. James, I'd love to get you in. I'd love to get you in to come and help us do all this stuff you talk about in the podcast, but we're not ready yet. We don't even have we don't even have risk assessments. We don't even have this. And I'm like, okay. So what you're going to do then is you're going to do all of these risk assessments, all of these policies and procedures, and then bring us in. And we're going to go back and redo all of that shit.
Right.
Yeah. Like, so we think it's this like step one, step two, step three. Like it's this evolution because we, to your exact point, I think you hit the nail on the head. We're naively assuming that everybody has these base level of traditional safety, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And we also naively assume that it's all shit. Like we read in the Safety Anarchist, for example, but actually it's some of it's good, some of it's all right, some of it's pretty shit. Like, but we've now got it in our heads that what we're going to do is write all of these risk assessments in the way that we don't like them to then go back and redo them instead of going, let's just talk about doing risk assessments better.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know, mate, it blows. I get exhausted with it. If I'm honest, like I go on LinkedIn. Do you know what? I go on Twitter for a rest from LinkedIn because LinkedIn's
that's bad, man.
LinkedIn for me is just exhausting now.
Well, it is. And so I, you know, that's what I've noticed, not to dive down that social media rabbit hole that much. But you know, I do that where I just log off, and I think my last hiatus was like 7 months. Something like that. Where it's just like, I need a break from this. It's too much of an echo chamber, it's too much hot air. And to that point, I think that's been so much of the issue that I've taken with a lot of, as we say, kind of thought leader kind of in this, but any safety space, you know, whatever we're talking about, there's a lot of thought and not a lot of action. You know what I mean? And I think that's where, for me being, and for you, we share this, that we've been safety practitioners, right, for all of our career. I didn't come up as an academic. I did not come up, you know, with an idea of even writing anything down about safety for the vast majority of my career. And I think that's the piece, is like, that's what organizations want to know. Like, that sounds great. Like, that sounds cool. And no matter the organization, large, small, somewhere in between, most people that spend time talking to me, they struggle with, how do I actually do that? That's like, this sounds great. Like we're talking about learning. We're talking about deferring to expertise and creating trusting environments, like all this stuff. And it all sounds great. And I've read all the books, but how the fuck do I actually do that in real life? And now I wish that there was an easier answer than to say, you know, I wish that some of the kind of safety snake oil salesman stuff actually worked, because we see that. We're talking about LinkedIn. You see that all the time, where somebody's like, just follow my new checklist and I'll sell it to you for $12.95. And if you just follow steps 1 through 32, safety culture will be yours, you know. And we know that that's a load of crap, right? And it, just FYI for anyone out there, if anyone's trying to sell you that there is one right way to do anything, especially the safety of work, there's one right way. And key emphasis here being that their right way is the one right way. I think I said that right. Yeah. Run away. You should run away really, really fast, because yeah, there's not one right way. And that's some of the challenge, I think.
That
organizations have to kind of embrace that there's not like a linear guide that comes along with really much of safety, whether we're talking new view, old school, traditional, whatever. You got to do what works best for you. And I think that's a key piece here when we're talking about these smaller organizations, is I don't think that, as much as I am a practitioner of human and organizational performance and kind of these doing things different, you know, not every organization is ready for that. I think that's a key thing to take away, that you have to lay a certain element of, you got to have the scaffolding built first before you can start doing the work on top of it. And I don't know that you can just, now the principles I think are sound and they carry through, but again, I don't know that you can just jump in and just say, we're going to this organization that has seven employees that just started last week is going to go through transformational change. That probably sounds like a really bad idea. They're just in the entry phase of figuring out who the hell they are to begin with.
But there's a lot in that. We definitely don't have long enough to get into.
We're going to have to do another round of this.
Yeah, we're going to have to. Here's a little simplified example of how you could use computer vision to proactively kind of identify things in the workplace as kind of learning opportunities without that kind of bureaucratic, slow, drawn out process of reporting and then daily reporting and so on and so forth. Because really what computer vision is vision, right? It's like an extra pair of eyes. But it's not got someone sitting watching that CCTV all day going, meh. So here's a really simplified version of how you could use it from the white paper produced by Protex AI, that's AI's role in promoting a proactive safety culture. Computer vision identifies packaging that's often left by the entrance to the store on Monday mornings. The safety team reviews the selected video clips with the workers. Key point there, with the workers. So the AI has gone, this always happens on a Monday. There's something there. So it's a specific thing. So if your safety walk is only on a Tuesday, you're never going to see this. So the AI has spotted it. That was my first observation of this simple kind of story or situation. So the safety team gets the workers in and we start to have a discussion. They explain that there are too many deliveries on a Monday morning to unpack and clear away at the same time. So the health and safety manager shows the computer vision evidence to the operations manager along with the feedback and so on from the teams. And then the deliveries are spread across 3 days, making it easier for them to manage the packaging. So you can see as a really kind of simple way of how this can help. Not only is that computer vision, that AI partnered with your CCTV, has kind of spotted up a trend. Oh, we've got a trend here. We're really good on the other days, but we're not on Mondays. And that's something I think would be really easy for us to miss in a workplace because it's only at a specific time and a specific place. So you've got to be in that specific place on that specific day at that specific time for you to spot that. The likelihood of that is very low. So the AI, the computer vision, has kind of done the work they needed to do, spotted the trend, pinged it up to you. You're able to get the team in and go, oh, look at this. This is what we're talking about on Mondays. This is happening. What's the sitch, peeps? And they're like, oh, well, deliveries are just mad on Mondays. We cram them all in on Monday. It's like delivery day, and it's just nuts. We haven't got time to clean this guy. Boom, learning opportunity. Just a very simple example of how having those extra set of eyes and you having the right attitude and approach to be able to use that as a learning opportunity can help you constantly, constantly improve, constantly learn, become a learning organization and start having that presence of positives. So you're just constantly doing stuff. I really like it. And I really like this example to just really clearly and concisely go, oh yeah, I get how that works now. So I took that out of Protex AI's white paper that you can download. The link is in the description. It's called AI's role in promoting a proactive safety culture. For me, this is all about becoming a learning organization, collecting that data, having all of that tech help you spot trends so that you can take that and learn from it. It's just increasing all of those constant learning opportunities. So go to the link in the description below, have a read. It's an easy read. There's some really cool little chunks in there. There's loads of stuff that you can learn from this paper. It's not overly academic or anything like that. It's a really simple, easy read. There's some good takeaways in there. And I think there's some really good takeaways in there regardless of your take on vision or not. So make sure you use the link in the description below and read the white paper, peeps. If we were to just take risk assessments as an example, right? Kind of US does those, Australia does those, England do those. In England, a risk assessment is the cornerstone of our legislation, right? It's everywhere. You can't do anything in a risk assessment. So if we were to take that as a kind of just an example to enter this conversation, we might go, we need to do a safety one risk assessment. And then when we're ready and the company is used to that, what we'll do is we'll go back to it, tweak it so that it becomes a safety two risk assessment. I just sounds fucking stupid. Like, what we're going to, that's the same as buying. What we need to do is buy a really shit car and then buy a really good car.
Well, it's a great, that sounds like an excellent sales tactic, because then I could sell you something twice. Right. But to actually pursue it, I think it hints back at something you were saying earlier in the conversation, is I think it's the shift in how we do these things right out of the gate. Right. So a risk assessment is a risk assessment. As we're kind of doing a risk assessment, we're kind of, and I mean that on the side of kind of hazard and risk kind of stuff, right? As we're kind of looking through an organization, as we're kind of working through a process, whatever, and we're looking at that, I think that what changes is what we understand that we can actually manage and manipulate, right? On the other side of that risk assessment, at least in this piece of it. So again, I think that's a practical bit that maybe a smaller organization could actually take on. Is this idea of, like, as we do risk assessments, rather than doing a risk assessment and then looking at stuff that's very, very brittle, right? Looking at stuff that just doesn't work super good. How do, you know, there's certain elements of that we have to have this probably in the regs that somewhere there, we're going to have to do this, we got to do that. But what's the most bang for our buck? And when we're looking on the other side of what our actual operational risks are, how do we take that and think more in that way? Right. Not just saying capacity, not just saying building in some margin, but how do we actually build the outcomes that we would prefer to see? And I think a lot of that comes from understanding that one of the few things that we actually have kind of control over is seeking out and managing the presence of controls and like viable controls, like good, like actual non-brittle, error tolerant kind of controls. And those are concepts that I don't believe have to be super complex. That doesn't have to be, you don't have to go through 7 hours of hot fundamentals and sit down with some type of, known massive speaker to tell you to do that. That's something that you can just kind of shift the way that you're thinking around those things. Like, maybe instead of just telling somebody to try harder, let's take that and think, what can we actually do with process X, Y, and Z to at least stack the cards, to stack the deck in our favor, that when my cousin Bob goes to do that, he's not going to fall and go splat. Or when he goes to do that, he's not going to get blinded or lose a limb or worse, right? How can we create systems that actually allow for non-catastrophic outcomes, even when shit kind of hits the fan? So I don't think that has to be a super complex thing. And that's where I really like to share with folks that are kind of early on in their journey or smaller organizations, like, just use that kind of start when safe kind of idea of, like, what's the shit that kills you? What controls do you have in place? And are they enough? And, like, you're doing it at that point. Like, those are the actual things that matter, right?
Yeah. Well, like, so but when I listen to that, I agree with everything you've just said, Sam, right? 100%.
Right.
But when I listen to it, I'm like, that's what the fucking legislation said when we wrote it in 1974 in England.
Right.
Like, that is a risk assessment, not a new view risk assessment, not a risk assessment, not a safety differently risk assessment.
Right.
It's a safety as originally intended risk assessment. And that I first coined the term, I don't know, I might have stole it off someone else, but I think I coined
it's
the
yours
term.
You got it now.
Fucking trademarking it, it's mine, right? I think I coined the term safety as originally intended fucking 3 years ago on the podcast. And like, if we were to take, I remember seeing Todd do a post actually where it says, instead of stop safe or safe when stop when not safe or something like, let's do, and you're just reminding me of it, let's do start when safe, right? Okay, well, that's nothing new. That makes sense to me. But like, that's what a risk assessment was supposed to be. Let's do, what are we trying to achieve here? We're trying to do this. What are the risks? What can we see in front of us? And how are we going to do it and managing these risks with impact? And that for me is what a lot of this is like, you're managing it with impact. And I think a lot of the time we're not talking about, there's a lot of papers out there, a lot of research out there. And there's a couple for me that are really important. And I fucking love the safety clutter paper by Drew, David and Sydney. I think one of the best pieces out there for people to read. And just to take away the three C's of clutter to be able to test anything that you're doing, for me, just do this. Just think of how much value does it cost, which they call contribution. So what does it contribute to? Does it contribute to the safety of work? But I would add something here, particularly in England. There's a lot of work that we need to do that's done in the name of safety that doesn't contribute to the safety of work. Right. It does contribute to the company. So I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The British setup as it is, it is what it is. And we're not going to change the fucking world. So if you need to write, we're not going to change the world overnight. We might change it eventually. Right. But if you need to write some rounds that are generic and they're not reflective of the shop floor, but you need to write them to tender for a job, fucking write them and tender for the job. But just the shop floor from them, just that would be my solution for that. So does it contribute to something within the company and deliver value? It confidence in that, in how you know that. Do you have evidence that it contributes, or do you believe it's evidence? If you don't have evidence, do you believe in it is contributing? So ideally it's evidence. A lot of the work we do in safety doesn't have evidence, but ideally you've got some evidence to say it does work. If you don't, do you, as a group of people that are about to implement this, believe that it's going to work? And do you have a consensus? Does it extend to those stakeholders on the shop floor who are going to be involved with that? Do they agree with what you're talking about? Do they agree? Do they have confidence? Do they agree that it contributes? I think if we did that, if we did those three tests with everything we do in safety, we'd go a very long fucking way. We'd go a very long way. So don't do, I'm just going to do old view because we're not ready for new view yet.
Right.
No, I'm just thinking about doing managing risk, but having impact on the shop floor, having impact on the safety of work. For me, that's not new or old. It's safety as originally intended.
I think you're. I don't think I know. You're spot on, because it's the question of impact, right? That's the key question. What actually matters, right? Yeah. To that point, and thinking about examining for what actually matters, what's actually meaningful. And kind of my world is it's tuning that question towards what's actually meaningful to not killing and maiming people, you know, like what actually matters. And you're spot on. There's definitely stuff we got to do that we just got to do. Right. And whether it sucks or not, we just got to do it because it's part of the regulation. It's part of something that's in our systems to protect us in various different ways, either from regulators or litigation or on and on and on. There's things you got to do as a company. Right. But how you translate that down, rather than doing that to people, having it there and not doing to people, is you can still do that, right? I think that's a really, really important point. And I agree with you, man. I think this, you know, what we're talking about isn't new. I think that when we're talking about these various bits and pieces, you know, I've had BBS people on here, Dr. Tim Ludwig, which is a phenomenal conversation. I've had some traditional safety folks. I have lots of HOP folks, obviously. But the thing that I discovered the most talking with all these folks is we're not that different. The thing is, and we're not really different at all in a lot of ways. I think that's what really shocked me with the Dr. Tim Ludwig conversation was we're just like, man, we're talking the same language here. So I think what you see is there's this kind of thing where organizations like to take stuff and they like to reduce it down to easy and then just kind of put their own spin on it. Or they like to piecemeal and they're like, it's like a buffet. Like, I'm going to take a little bit of this. I'm going to take a little bit of that.
Yep.
And the way it's applied kind of throws us back into the shit side of things, right? We apply it with their current assumptions of liking to blame, of all these kind of other things, right? And we don't have enough time to dive down that rabbit hole because you and I both have to run to go do other things. But
I can talk about blame all day.
Right, exactly. And I think that that's one of those things where, you know, how we apply those things, I think that's where the principles, and I say just the principles, a good set of principles, a better set of assumptions as an organization, no matter what you want to call the ways that you approach the safety of work, as long as you're examining for doing the things that are meaningful, the things that matter, right, that actually impact what you're looking to impact, as long as you're applying it, you know, with this sense of focusing on the workforce as a problem solver. And I think that's a key piece in that change, right? I don't know that you're going to be that far off from whatever the hell we're calling it.
Yeah.
I think boxing it in stifles innovation, actually, if we start saying, I'm just doing this in this box and it's just called HOP, or it's just safety differently, or it's just safety two, or it's just traditional stuff. We're actually killing safety innovation probably at that point because we're just stuck in that box.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing we as a profession need to do before we do anything else is remember that academics are supposed to bicker with each other, but we as practitioners are not meant to pick one and stick with that.
No.
Leave them at the top to bicker amongst each other, get bitchy, write books about each other, do whatever they need to do, because
right.
What scientists, academics are supposed to do. They're supposed to bicker. And what we're supposed to do is take their work, give it a fucking go and see what works. And then, because you might, as a consultant, we'll go to one company and they're like, oh, we love BBS. And I'm like, cool. Because I've had Dom Cooper on my podcast, the same as you had, I can't remember, your guy on your podcast. And he's talking and I'm like, mate, that's fucking hop. What you just said there is hop. I'm now talking to someone on hop and I'm like, mate, that's fucking BBS. It's the same shit, just different ways of saying it. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because there's a load of people that got on. Mate, this is the thing. When we think about we're all fucking tied up in knots. And now is the amount of messages I'm going to get being like, actually, it's based off Taylorism and Taylorism is this. And like, leave your fucking academia over there because there are aspects of all of it that are really good and there are aspects of all of it that might not work for you and that's cool. But if you're focused on contributing to the actual risk on the shop floor, if you're confident that that's having an impact and there is a consensus within the workplace, I don't fucking give a shit what you call it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those things where as long as you're embracing and leaning into kind of, and I don't mean to boil this down to something that's too reduced, but you're focused on caring for people, right? You're focused on caring for your workforce and embracing that kind of human element. Sorry, as my phones are kind of blasting in the background, people telling me I'm late for this other meeting, but it's one of those things where it's as long as you're genuinely focused on embracing humanity and leaning into the humanity of your organization and taking care of those folks. And again, not to reduce it down to something as simple as the golden rule, but caring for those folks like you would want to be cared for. I think that matters, right? I think those things do matter. And I think you're absolutely right. We get too hung up in this concept, this book, that book. And we forget that we are practitioners, meaning that we actually go out and practice, you know, this stuff. We feel our way through it. And that's the piece that I would kind of wrap up with is just saying that, you know, every organization's journey to doing whatever better, right? To trying to influence the safety of work a little bit better, it's going to be totally different. Right. We're going to have some sharing. There might be something that might work for this company that might work for yours, but they might be doing this and doing great with it. And it might be horrific in your organization. So you just have to embrace that bit of it, of understanding that it's not a copy. Nothing that you do in this world can really be a copy and paste. You can learn some lessons. You can try some stuff on for size, but your way is your way because organizations like people are infinitely unique and you should embrace that uniqueness because that's what makes you cool. That's what makes you you. That's what makes you your organization. Lean into that uniqueness and build something around that, right? And I think having that set in a good set of principles that are based around kind of the assumptions that we know to be better assumptions is a good way to kind of be that test or to act as that test of what will kind of work or what should maybe be here, what should not be here, what should we stop doing, what should we start doing. I think that's a good way to start sorting and kind of prioritizing that stuff that we should be going out and actually trying to do.
People are not the problem, but they are a fucking pain in the ass.
That's a fact, man. I know I'm a pain in the ass. So I know I'm a pain in the ass because I somehow managed to get our meeting off by 1 hour and put us into this time crunch. But
I had one at 4 and 1 at 5 and I was like, what the fuck?
I cannot be trusted with technology. Well, I've got to tell you, man, this is the fastest podcast or the fastest conversation I think you and I have ever had, but I've got to run. I'm 5 minutes late for another thing.
Yeah, me too. But maybe it's good that we're cutting it into 30 minutes. Let's find out.
We're going to see you, man. Thank you so much for coming on, my friend. How can people find you before I hit the end button?
Just go on LinkedIn and find me at James McPherson or Google risk flow and rebounding safety and we'll come up.
Cool, man. We're going to have to do this again real soon, but next time I think we're going to need like 2 hours.
Nice one. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, peeps. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, that quick fire conversation with Sam. Don't forget to check out the Hop Nerd as well. Sam's doing loads of awesome work at the moment. He's got loads of books as well. Go and have a read of those. If you want some support with any of the stuff we've spoken about, if you're thinking, oh, we'd like to think about New View and high reliability and all of this stuff, but we need some help with it, we would gladly help you. We don't just work with small businesses and have like retained offers for them. We also have like, we like to build bespoke partnerships with existing safety teams as well. So we thought, what can we do to help people? That was me many years ago. And I think as a safety professional, I always thought, well, I don't need a consultant on a kind of partnership model because, well, I'm the safety team. So what, that's my job. And sometimes it's just helpful to have a connection there with people. So hopefully, if you need some help with this, come and have a chat and we'll knock something up. Otherwise, check out the healthandsafetynetwork.com. The Health and Safety Network is, and I will link it in the description below, it's a community of health and safety professionals. And you can have a call a week where you can get some help and some support. You can listen, you can give help and support. You've got a community of safety professionals. It's your own safety team. And more often than not, when we build these bespoke partnerships for our customers, we roll in the Health and Safety Network membership as well, because I think it's such a powerful community. So go check that out as well. Healthandsafetynetwork.com. It's in the links in the description below. And if this goes out before the 1st of October, then check out the 1st of October in the Exchange Bar around 3 o'clock. We'll be doing a networking lunch. If this hasn't gone out or you're listening to this after the 1st of October, then you've missed your chance, but we will do it again. Thank you very much. I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.